Ms. Thielen, good morning to you.
This is Mary Mullen Dvorak, Assistant Public Defender, on behalf of Appellant Richard Seda. May it please the court, the sole issue before the court is whether the district court erred in overruling appellant's motion to suppress. In short, our position is that the district court erred by applying outdated Nebraska law to hold that because there was probable cause to search appellant's glove, that the search was proper. However, it's clear that this court has since clarified that that language, that a probable cause to search allows a search, is not an exception to the warrant requirement with respect to search of a person. And the state has conceded this point. However, I wanted to address the argument in the state's brief that this court should uphold the district court's decision on different grounds, that this was a search incident to arrest. From the outset, you know, while that may be within the court's authority to do, I would caution the court to do that. You know, it wasn't something that was argued in the court below. The state didn't present that argument. The district court didn't rely on that ground. And so I think that there are some principles of fairness as far as that not being developed in the record below, as well as the fairness to the parties in the sense that representing defendants, we're well aware of the peril of waiving arguments on appellate review by not raising them below. And I think that the same principles can be applied and should be applied to the state. With that, I would address the merits of the argument that this could be a search incident to arrest. The state posits that the crime of arrest could possibly be trespass, burglary, or theft. I think that a review of the record, and particularly a review of the body-worn camera, would indicate that none of those potential crimes have any evidence that would support probable cause to arrest Mr. Seda for those. So for example, just a couple of things. At the motion to suppress hearing, the officer who testified specifically was asked whether he had probable cause to arrest for any offense before finding the meth. And while his subjective assessment of whether there's probable cause to arrest obviously is not dispositive, I do think it's relevant. That question was put to him on page 13 of the Bill of Exceptions. He was asked, did you have any other reason to take him into custody that day prior to finding the meth? And his response was no, just to identify him to make sure he belonged there and had a lawful purpose for being there. So he's essentially acknowledging that his understanding of the circumstances as he was standing there when he made contact with the appellant, he had no other reason to detain him other than to do a Terry stop.
Doesn't the state's brief to which your argument is now addressing say that there was probable cause to arrest for trespassing or burglary or theft? Isn't that the hypothetical?
Those are the hypotheticals. And, I was just pointing out that the officer didn't even try to claim that there's probable cause to arrest before the controlled substance was found.
Is that a question of the officer's subjective understanding, or is it an objective test based upon the reasonable officer with the knowledge of what this officer knew?
Well, I do think that the officer's testimony at the motion suppress hearing is his subjective opinion. However, I do think it's relevant. He's the one who observed all of the things that would go into an objective officer's assessment, the furtive movements, the unusual activity. And even though he had command of all of those facts, he was saying his subjective opinion was that there wasn't probable cause to arrest until he found the controlled substance. I do think it's relevant. I don't think it's dispositive.
If this court were to review the record objectively and determine that there is objective evidence that arrest with respect to one of those three crimes is supported by the evidence, then where are we? We a potential arrest for some of these other things.
Well, I think if the court finds objectively evidence supporting probable cause to an arrest, then I think, you know, then you also need to determine whether, you know, the search obviously happened before the arrest happened. And so you would look to whether that was a proper incident, you know, a search proper incident to arrest. I mean, I think I would probably lose on the inevitable discovery doctrine there. But I think if you look at the record, I don't think you're going to find any evidence supporting probable cause to arrest for those crimes. I do want to note that the court made a factual finding, I believe, on page 39 of the Bill of Exceptions during, you know, when he was kind of taking argument after the motion to suppress. The court said, I don't think there's any evidence he was in fact stealing. I think that that's a factual finding. And that is afforded deference. That's not a legal conclusion that this court reviews de novo. He's saying,
did the trial court judge find that the handing over of the glove was consensual?
He didn't address that in any length.
I'll direct your attention to specifically what I'm talking about. But wasn't there a reference in the order of there wasn't any seizure here? The officer asked for the glove and he gave it to him.
Yeah, I agree. That's in the order. I think that
is that a finding of historical fact, and then is it then subject to clear error review?
No, I don't think that's a finding of, because, you know, that's not a factual finding. Deeming something consensual or not is a matter of law, I think. And so I do think that this court can and should review that de novo. I also think, given the length of time that he addressed that, that was kind of a throwaway comment and took up a paragraph, and then he went on to basically justify his ruling in several pages, you know, under the finding of that there was probable cause. I don't think, especially if you watch the body-worn camera, which is, it's very brief, you can watch it under 2 minutes, you know, I don't think that there's any objective way to say that this was a consensual encounter. I think also the state has more or less conceded that this was at least a Terry stop. So I think if you look at the, you know, first of all, this court doesn't have to give deference to that. Even if you decide that, you know, the court made a finding that this was consensual, I think you have the authority to review that de novo. I think it's not supported by the record. You know, the language before the search was, that before the search happened, the officer put a hand on him. He said, hold up. And then his words, as far as, you know, I don't have them right in front of me, but it's something of along the lines of, let me see that glove. So it's a command. It's not a request. He physically stopped him. He prevented him from leaving. And then he said, let me see that glove. And then he said, the other one. And then upon that, you know, Mr. Seda complied with that command, but it was not a consensual encounter.
Counsel, with respect to your argument about the position of the state shifting on appeal, does the fact that we have a two-part standard of review, part for clear error on historical facts, and then our review de novo, does that have an impact on your argument?
Well, you know, in terms of whether we've been prejudiced by not being able to get out certain facts, is that what you're asking me, Judge?
Yes.
I don't know. You know, obviously, I think that the court needs to treat this case with understanding that how you treat this case is going to be replicated in other cases. I don't know that our questions would have been different at the motion to suppress stage had, you know, probable cause to arrest been raised. And especially given that there's body-worn camera in this case, I think that, frankly, the evidentiary hearing isn't quite as important because you can watch it all on video. But what I guess what I'm saying is, you know, you need to make a rule that can apply in a case where it might make a difference to what we would ask if, depending on the state's theory. I see I'm out of time. I would ask that the court reverse the district court. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Dvorak. Ms. Osborne, good morning to you.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the court, my name is Jordan Osborne, Assistant Attorney General representing the state of Nebraska. This is a criminal case where the defendant was found guilty of possession of methamphetamine, and as we've been hearing, the issue is whether the methamphetamine that was found in his glove should have been suppressed. So I'll begin just very quickly at the beginning. This started with a walk and talk between two officers and Mr. Seda. And that initial contact was a consensual encounter. There was no seizure of his person and it didn't implicate the Fourth Amendment. And of course, there are three tiers of police citizen encounters. And we know that not all contact between a police officer and a citizen involves the seizure of that citizen's person. So that initial contact being a tier one police citizen encounter that involves voluntary cooperation that is elicited through non-coercive questioning and does not involve the restraint or liberty of any restraint of the liberty of the citizen. And that's what we have in that initial contact. So going just very quickly to the facts, which I believe are relevant to the analysis, all of the initial information that were known to the officers was obtained before they even had contact with Seda. So starting at, this occurred at 5:43 a.m. while it was still dark outside. Although it was near sunrise, the officers drove past an alley in Omaha and Seda was observed peering into a building that was in the process of being demolished. Those officers were aware that there had been repeated reports about people trespassing inside the building and people stealing scrap metal from the building. They knew that the construction workers who were involved in the demolition were not present at that early time in the morning, and there was nobody that was supposed to be at the building at that point. So when they see Seda peering into the building, they go down the alley to inquire what he's doing there, and they enter the alley in a marked patrol vehicle. Seda is no longer visible because as they find out as they approach, he's attempting to hide and conceal himself behind, up against the building behind a bush. And the officers, in approaching, they did not activate their overhead lights or sirens. They just stopped the vehicle in the alley. They get out and they ask Seda, what's up? And
prior to asking him what's up, had they observed the scrap positioned where he had been standing in the bushes?
Prior to the conversation. I don't believe that they had observed any scrap metal until they got out of the vehicle and asked him what's up. At that point, they do observe a pile of scrap metal sitting on the ground immediately right where Seda was standing. Prior to that point, when they initially make that contact, these are all events that are occurring in a public alleyway. There's no lights or sirens. There's no weapons displayed. They don't summon Seda to them. They don't give any directives or demands. All they do is in a conversational tone say, what's up? And then that encounter continues with some questions about what he's doing there. So at that point, that is a consensual encounter. Fourth Amendment's not implicated. And then we do get to a point where there is a tier two encounter that occurs about 30 seconds into the contact with Seda starts to walk away. Luckily, just briefly touches his arm and says, hold up. And that's the first point at which we have a detention because at that point he's not free to leave. But by this point, the officers have reasonable suspicion to believe that a criminal activity is afoot, permitting them to detain Seda. All the same facts that I just discussed were known to the officers. And in addition, there were several other facts that were known at that point. Seda's attempt to conceal himself behind the bush was suspicious to Officer Buckley as a trained law enforcement officer. When Seda asked, what's up, man? The spontaneous response from Seda is, I don't have any tools on me. Despite nobody asking him about tools, they don't even ask him what he was doing at that point. They don't ask him if he's breaking into the building or stealing anything. He just spontaneously blurts out, "I don't have any tools on me." The officers at that point observe a pile of scrap metal laying on the ground where Sato was hiding behind the bush. And that's immediately adjacent to the door that he was peering in to look inside the building. And it's also, I think, a particular note when you look at the body camera video in Exhibit 1, there is no other scrap metal laying along this alleyway, along this building that runs the entire block. There's one pile of scrap metal immediately where Seda is standing. And then the officers observe that Seda is wearing one glove on his left hand. He's not wearing two gloves. This is July, at a time where one typically would not wear gloves. And the glove that he was wearing is described as the type of glove an electrician uses to prevent cutting his hands on wires, which further indicates his involvement in attempting to remove the scrap metal or other items from the building. There isn't any other reason for him to be wearing this glove other than to protect his hands from getting cut up from the metal.
In your brief, you indicate that there was evidence that would be sufficient to arrest the defendant, which then would justify a search incident to an arrest. And you posit trespassing, burglary, and theft. Is this the moment when there is enough evidence to arrest?
Yes, prior to when he even touches his arm and says, "Hold up," there is sufficient evidence at that point for probable cause to arrest on any of those offenses or an attempt of any of those, any one of those offenses. In addition to what I've already mentioned, you also have the original furtive movement of hiding behind the bush and a second furtive movement when he shoves an item, concealing an item in his from the officers as they approach. And then the officer describes Seda's demeanor throughout as extremely nervous and extremely sweaty. All of these objective facts amount to a reasonable, particularized suspicion for the detention, but they also amount to probable cause for arrest.
Could you respond to Ms. Dvorak's comment with respect to this argument of a search incident to an arrest wasn't raised below, but is being presented to us for our consideration at this time?
Yes, Your Honor. And I would note that essentially what we have here is the district court is based its decision on there being probable cause to search the glove based on an earlier decision that was later reversed in State versus Perry. So essentially what you have is the district court making the correct ultimately having the correct result for the wrong reason. And this court has repeatedly held that a correct result will not be set aside merely because the lower court applied the wrong reasoning in reaching that result. And that has specifically been applied in the Fourth Amendment context. State versus Riviera, 2017, is an example. But in this particular context of a Fourth Amendment circumstance, just because the lower court made their finding on a different basis that is ultimately incorrect, you have the correct result for the wrong reason. The court has affirmed those in the past, specifically in a Fourth Amendment context. So
what do you think is the significance in the order of the trial court stating at 25 of the transcript, "Officer Buckley simply asked defendant for his glove and defendant gave it to him"? Is that a finding of historical fact?
I think that the statement about what happened could be considered a finding of historical fact. It appears that what the court is saying there is that it was a consensual handing over of the glove. The court doesn't go into a further analysis of how that's consensual or doesn't provide additional information about how he comes to that determination. In fact, I don't even think he uses the word consensual. So it's a little bit unsure exactly what he's trying to say there, but it seems like that's what he's referring to.
Do you view the body camera footage as consistent with a consensual handing over of the glove?
Well, he certainly hands over the glove, and he doesn't try to avoid doing that in any way. I guess the question would be,
do you view the officer as saying, asking, will you give me the glove? Or do you view the officer as saying, as a command, give me the glove?
Well, I think that the actual language is closer to a command. He says something to the effect of, let me see the glove. And it doesn't sound like a question to me. Ultimately, I mean, our argument is not based on whether that was consensual or that he voluntarily or consensually provided the glove over. Our argument is that there was probable cause to arrest prior to any discussion of the glove, which I think is supported by the factual findings of the district court. And I don't believe that there are significant disputes about what the factual findings of the district court are here. The factual findings are included in the record. It's included in the order. We have body camera videos, so I don't believe that there are disputes about what those factual historical findings are. Your Honor, may I briefly conclude here since I'm out of time?
You may wrap it up.
Thank you, Your Honor. I would mention just two things very quickly. One is that probable cause does not demand a showing that the belief of probable cause to arrest be correct or be more likely true than false. It also does not require the type of specific evidence of each element of the offense as would be needed to support a conviction. And it was briefly mentioned the objective standard, which I think is particularly important in this case. It was mentioned by opposing counsel that the officer who testified that his subjective assessment that there was probable cause to arrest for another offense is relevant. And in fact, the U.S. Supreme Court in several different cases, as well as this court, has mentioned multiple times that it is in fact not relevant. It plays no part in an ordinary probable cause Fourth Amendment analysis. And you'll see those references in the state's brief. That would be Wren versus United States, Devin Beck versus Alford, Ohio versus Robinette, in this court, State versus Pesch in 2018. So there's no part that plays. It's completely immaterial and irrelevant. So if there are no further questions, the state would ask this court to affirm the judgment of the district court on the alternative basis of the valid search incident to lawful arrest.
Thank you very much. Do we have time for rebuttal? But Ms. Dworak, we'll give you a minute and a half if you want to do some rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. Unless there's other questions, one thing that I would just want to address are the three crimes of possible arrest: trespass, burglary, or theft. Burglary and theft, you know, both require as their elements that there's some evidence of theft. The district court made the factual finding that there was none in the record, and I think that that's borne out by the testimony and the body-worn camera. So that leaves trespass. If you look at trespass under Nebraska law, that requires that a person enters or secretly remains in any building or occupied structure, not being licensed or privileged to do so. There's no evidence that the appellant was found in the building at all. There was no testimony that he entered the building or that he had been in the building. There was no evidence of that. I would caution the court. So I guess what I'm saying is that, you know, while the state doesn't have to show that there's a specific crime, you know, that they're arresting for every single element, those elements and those crimes that are presented, anything that he could have been arrested for is just completely lacking in evidence to support it. I would caution the court not to equate reasonable suspicion with probable cause. Sure, reasonable suspicion might allow the police officers to inquire as to his whereabouts, what he's doing. But if you look at the sequence of events on the body-worn camera, they went immediately from detention, hey, hold up, to a search. I mean, it is seconds. So there's nothing that happened in between that detention and the search that would have allowed probable cause to develop. So there's nothing that would, you know, basically justify that escalation from reasonable suspicion to probable cause to arrest. They didn't learn any information in that interim. With that, I would ask that the court reverse the district court. I thank you.
Thank you very much. We will go on then to the next case of the day, which is Picard versus P&C Group One.